White Rocket Entertainment.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
A miracle in Jordan Hare! A miracle in Jordan Hare!
We welcome you to Jordan Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
Let's watch some football. Now everybody. Come on, everybody.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Let's watch some football.
Oh, hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment. In association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. And now by Audible.com and by the book tour for Ken Ringer's Lorendo. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, it's been a long time since we rock and roll. But here we are. We're back.
Little Led Zeppelin reference there.
We'll talk about that a little bit later, but that's right. I have been doing a little Led Zeppelin work the last couple of weeks. But we've had multiple people actually ask us, do you guys still do a show? So I take that to mean we've taken a little long break.
And the season is getting near. People are getting antsy. They want to hear what we think about stuff. So now's the time to talk about it.
Yeah, the season's getting near, and that's what's definitely got people people fired up. We did like Formula One. We had an August break. Now it's getting near the end of the month and it's time to come back and get back into it. So, we've got a few things to kind of go over in our final, I guess this is probably our last episode before the season starts, isn't it? I mean, we got lots of stuff going on over the next couple of weeks. What do you think? We're going to do another one? Is this it?
We could talk about it off the air, but probably with the schedule, it's maybe the last one before the season starts.
Yeah, and you know, now that I mentioned that, let me go ahead. I totally forgot to put this into the show notes, but I want to make sure that everybody knows this because there's quite a few people that cross over in this in our audience, not just me and a few other people. There's quite a few that both, you know, are Atlanta people and Auburn people or go to Dragon Con and are Auburn people. So I want to just kind of put it out there that, as always, opening weekend is the same weekend as Dragon Con. And, you know, when Auburn plays in the Georgia Dome, I always find a way to go. I find a way to get my schedule cleared and sneak over there. But when Auburn plays in Auburn, you know, people are like, it's just 2 hours away. But, oh, no, that's not a two-hour commitment. It's like, you know, you leave the hotels, you find a transportation, you get all the way to Auburn, you deal with all that traffic, you find a place to park, you walk to the stadium. You're already talking 4 hours, you know. Now you got a four-hour game since it's late night on TV, and when that game ends, Atlanta time, as you well know, being from Atlanta, it'll be 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Starts on 9 Eastern. Then you got to get all the way back over to Atlanta and get back in the hotel, and by that time it's 4 o'clock in the morning. So if I were to try to go on this two-hour little jaunt over to Auburn for a football game, it would basically be an almost 24-hour operation for me, and I would miss a good third of the, you know, convention. So there's really no point. I mean, why even go to Dragon Con if you're going to try to do that? I did that in 2003. I snuck away in the afternoon and went over to Auburn for the USC game because I thought, you know, how many times is Southern Cal going to play at Auburn? And I'm glad I did. But, yeah, I missed all day Saturday and Sunday morning, you know. So it's just incredibly impractical. So, but anyway, if you are an Auburn person listening to this show and you also like you some Dragon Con, which is currently North America's largest fan-run pop culture convention. And I mean, it covers almost everything. It doesn't cover football. We tried, right? We tried. But it doesn't cover, but it covers almost everything else. I mean, I went to a panel last year on Downton Abbey. And there were women there in the dresses and stuff. There were like, there were women there that sounded like this.
Why does every day involve a fight with an American?
So, they've got a new track this year called the Military Science Fiction Media Track. And I'm just in hog heaven with that one because it's a tract totally devoted to just four things, John. It's devoted to Babylon 5, Stargate TV shows and movie, Battlestar Galactica, and Farscape. Those are four awesome, awesome properties right there. So I'll be on that track a good bit. I'll be in Sci-Fi Lit as usual. I'll be in American Sci-Fi Classics with Joe Crow and Gary Mitchell and that whole crowd, which is a fun crowd. And I'll also be hosting the usual game shows, Jeopardy and so forth, Starship Showdown, stuff like that. So if you are coming to Dragon Con, check me out. Look me up. All you got to do, if you're coming to Dragon Con, get the app on your smartphone and go into presenters. There's like a performers or presenters guests, tab. If you go in there, you can scroll down to me and it lists almost everywhere I'm going to be. I'll be on a few panels that they don't even know about. I always kind of crash a few, but it lists almost every place I'm going to be. So if you want to see me, stop by, say hello, pick up a book. I'll have two backpacks full of books. Maddie's coming down with me this year. I'll have plenty of stuff with me. Or get me to sign a book you already have. Just look on the app or get a hold of the schedule on paper. They got paper schedules too, and you'll find where I'm going to be pretty much all weekend. It should be a blast. And we're going to try to put together some kind of a Dragon Con Auburn Clemson watching party, and I'm really hoping 8-Ball the Tiger comes. Isn't it epic to watch Auburn Clemson with 8-Ball? I mean, you know, every time, something bad happens for Clemson, you'll hear, and then his eyes start doing that, boo, boo, that should be a lot of fun. So anyway, I just want to make sure everybody knew that if you're going to be at Dragon Con and you're an Auburn person or whatever, you can find me pretty easily. We'll be doing stuff Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So anyway, we got Auburn stuff to talk about, don't we?
We do.
All right. So what is up first on our agenda?
I guess I was going to ask you how you feel at this point of the offseason, how you feel less than 2 weeks from the opening kickoff. But I think part of that bleeds into our discussion of the news and the major topics. So should we talk about how you feel or just go straight into the discussion of these different topics?
Well, let me summarize and then we can dig in.
All right.
I will say this. As weird as it sounds, I was thinking about that this morning, and I made a little note to remind me to tell you this. As weird as it sounds, I could see this Auburn team beating Clemson and or LSU and or Georgia, maybe even and or Alabama. I mean, I could see them winning one or more of those games, and at the same time, I could see them losing to both Arkansas State and Vanderbilt. Now, I know that sounds weird, but here's why. We talked about how Vanderbilt is a trap game, right?
Yes.
We talked about...
It's a trap!
Right. Thank you, Admiral. And, and that was, by the way, let me make a note here. But also, do you know who all is on the roster at Arkansas State right now?
I do.
They've picked up quite a few sort of Division I top-level players over the last year or two. They've got the guy with the most appropriate name in the history of D-lineman.
D-liner.
D-liner is a D-liner.
One time we thought he was coming to Auburn, ended up at Alabama, now at Arkansas State.
At Arkansas State. Just goes to show you, even when they choose Alabama over Auburn, doesn't mean they end up there. And then they have a really good, is it a running back or a line? They've got somebody else that's like a top flight, one of those players like Gus and Freeze used to have there when they both coached there for a year.
Well, they have Trooper Taylor's son.
Okay.
Who was at TCU and is a wide receiver and who apparently returned a kickoff for a touchdown in a scrimmage yesterday.
Okay.
And we thought at one point he was coming to Auburn.
Right. So I guess the upshot of what I'm getting at is, Arkansas State is not Louisiana Monroe or whatever. They're a legit team with some serious – I mean, they to me remind me of like last year's Jacksonville State in a way. They got very little name recognition, but they got some serious players that could do you some damage if you don't take them seriously enough. So – and, of course, again, we talked about Vandy. So, in other words, what I'm saying is I could see this team being able to get up for a big game, but I'm very concerned about those little trap games – It would be kind of a sucky year to beat Clemson and then turn around and lose to Arkansas State, wouldn't it?
It would, but I think part of the thing that you're making, the point that you're making here, is a point I wanted to talk about in a little while, which is the schedule is really, really, really tough.
Yes.
And there aren't any Pacifics or, you know, whoever the worst teams we've played in the last 10 years are. There aren't a lot of those on the schedule. By most measures out there, Auburn plays the toughest schedule in the country. And, again, like you're saying, even the teams that you would say are the weaker teams are still dangerous. Arkansas State is, clearly the second best non-conference team we're going to play, and they're a dangerous team. They're going to score points, and Vanderbilt is very good on defense. And I think, again, like you're saying, you can't sleepwalk through those games and only get up for the Clemsons and the Alabamas this year. Because
that's exactly
if you do that, we're going to have a real bad year.
I think that kind of summarizes it very well. And the idea that I feel like this Auburn team is a team that if everything comes together, could play with anybody, but they also aren't a juggernaut and could lose to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, in far as their schedule goes, and we'll roll this on into the news now, I was just noting somebody on Twitter mentioned that Auburn plays the top two teams right now, three of the top five teams, and five of the top eight teams in the current AP poll. That sounds like what something Tuberville would have done back in the mid-2000s, doesn't it?
Well, we didn't know when we scheduled it that Clemson was going to be the number two team, but it is a very tough schedule.
Why the heck didn't we play Clemson 10 years ago and USC right now?
That would have been nice.
We got it backwards. We played USC when they were a juggernaut, and we play Clemson when they're a juggernaut. My gosh. I mean, so we needed to have scheduled Baylor about 2 years ago going forward and play them now, or in a year.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. Well, into the news. I mean, I guess we haven't. Have we not spoken since Jovan Robinson?
No. The last time we talked, he was still on the team, and we still had good hopes from him. So since the last time we talked, he got kicked off the team, and we have a different running back situation now.
Yeah, we definitely do have a different running back situation. We're very looking forward to seeing
Carry On My Wayward Son.
And I heard something good today about Malik Miller, just in general, that he, I think it was a quote that Gus or Rhett once said. I guess it was Gus said he is definitely going to be playing this year. So the last I heard, Miller was on the bottom of the depth chart. So what does that tell you?
Well, I mean, I think, number one, the depth chart isn't that deep at running back.
Oh, yeah.
A tailback, in terms of real, tailback kind of guys, it's basically, Kerryon Johnson, Cameron Petway, and Malik Miller. You got the kid from Baylor, Cam Martin, who's, the freshman who signed, who was a running back at Texas, but he's a smaller, quicker guy, so he's more of like
Is he going to be doing the sweep?
He's going to be the McCaleb.
You think so?
Yes.
Is it not going to be Jason Smith?
I think it's going to be this guy, Miller.
Okay, good.
I mean, I think some of the receivers are going to carry it too. I think Jason Smith will run with it some, and I think Stan True will run with it some. But I think this guy is going to be the, kind of the speedy little outside running back. But so, if. And I don't think Kerryon Johnson is a 30-carry-a game guy. I think it's going to be like Petway, 15, 20 carries a game, and Kerryon Johnson, 15 touches a game running and receiving, or Wildcat quarterback, whatever. And then when they play the Arkansas State, if we're up a couple touchdowns in the second half, it's going to be a lot of Malik Miller in that game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do we kind of see Chandler Cox being the main H-back, at least in running situations, and we see Kerryon and Petway kind of swapping in and out as running back right now?
Yes. I mean, I think
– depending on situationally.
And not just situationally, but I think Petway is going to be kind of the steady between the tackles, 3-4 yard, pound the other team, kind of guy. And he could take the beating, and I think he could wear it in the other team a little bit. And I think the big thing is – Kerryon's the big play guy. He's the guy that's going to make explosive plays in the running back position. And but I think he can't, you know, carry it between the tackles 30 times. So we got to use Petway for a lot of that. And I think, you know, and we have to use Kerryon kind of sparingly and kind of not overuse him. I mean, clearly in a game like Clemson, we got to score a lot of points. We're going to need him to make a bunch of plays.
I've been saying for months that Cameron Petway was exciting to me as a big old, you know, monster running back, Ironhead Hayward, what was that Kansas City Chiefs guy they used to have? That
Christian Okoye.
Okoye, that kind of guy. I want defenses and opposing fans looking at Cameron Petway and saying,
"What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy."
That's what I want him to say after he's done with him. That's what I want to hear. I need a sound effect for Cameron Petway, but I'm hoping that could be it.
I do want him, you know, I do like the idea of a 240-pound tailback where you could just kind of, you know, because what in the big picture, what is the strength of the Auburn offense? It's the guards. It's the two, you know, it's the Braden Smith and Alex Kozan. That's the strength of the offense. Those two guys running up the middle and pulling and running around the end, those two guys are the strength to me. And so, you know, those are the two guys we got that to me are like all conference kind of guys on offense. So we run Petway behind them and you know, run the fullback up in their Cox, blocking for them or whoever, and kind of pound the other team. And I think, you know, it could be a thing where it doesn't yield a lot in the first quarter, but as the game wears on, you know, I think he could take a toll on the other team and it could really loosen them up for him and for other players as the game goes along.
That would be glorious. We call him the tenderizer. Pounds away to your cube steak. The tenderizer.
Yes.
Let's stick the tenderizer on him. I'm excited. I mean, I know people have been tweeting me and stuff and saying, oh, he's not a real running back. You don't want him to be playing running back. This is not a good situation. I'm excited about it. I think it's a very good situation.
Well, I mean, I was excited about John Robinson, and I think he was really good, and I think he would have really helped the team. But I'm interested to see what Petway can do, and I think he can. I don't think it's like a panic kind of thing putting him there. I think he can handle it, and I think he can get yards on teams, so.
Yeah, I think it's – I mean, he's kind of the Brandon Jacobs of this crowd. And imagine if we had lost Cadillac and Ronnie Brown both before 2003. I guarantee you Brandon Jacobs would have gotten a lot of carries, a lot more than he did, which was almost none. He had to go to Southern Illinois. So, no Jovan. And now we've been dealt a blow at an even thinner in some ways position, maybe defensive back with Jamal Dean.
Right, that's the guy that basically transferred from Ohio State without ever playing there, and he's a big cornerback, and you thought he was going to play kind of the opposite Carlton Davis and be kind of the field guy, be kind of the cornerback that's out there against the run a lot. And so he's hurt, so it looks like it's going to be this guy that redshirted last year, Javaris Davis, who's supposed to be the fastest player on the team, according to some people, and Dean is, you know, out. So we're also getting the guy from the Mac school is supposed to be back and playing this week. We'll see, you know, whether he's ready to go.
So, I have a question about that. I have a stop everything, stop the show. I have a question about that. But before we get to that, Jabari Davis. That can't really be his name. I have a theory that they're just giving everybody this is like the witness protection program. And they're just giving out the name Davis. So Davis is like a code word for a guy in the witness protection. So like our quarterback will either be John Davis III or Sean Davis or Jeremy Davis, right? And they're going to be giving the ball to Cameron Davis and Chandler Davis, right? That's, you know, I'm sure Coach Gus Davis will be, you know, very excited about all that. But here's my question about the Miami guy, Miami of Ohio.
Marshall Taylor is his name.
The Miami guy is
You lied to me. Release the hounds.
That's the Miami guy now, Ricked. But the Miami of Ohio
be here
guy.
Any minute.
Oh, shut up. But the Miami of Ohio guy. Now here's the thing. everything I've heard this last couple of weeks about him has said, well, can he play considering he hasn't been going to practice, right? Missed fall camp. Here's my question. Can he play if he hasn't been going to class? People just kind of act like he... Dude, if he's home, he's not in class. I don't know about Auburn. I don't know about you, John. It's been a couple of years since I was a student at Auburn. It's been a minute, as they say. But at the college where I teach, if you're not in class on the first day, I, as the professor, have the right to not let you in my class and to basically drop you pretty quickly. So how is he going to play if he's at home in wherever and not in class in Haley Center or Brown Hall or wherever?
Good question.
Yeah. I haven't heard anybody address that. And I'm thinking, I'm not that smart. I couldn't be the only person that's thought of this. So I'd love to know the answer.
He's doing one of those like remote MBA programs or something.
He's got all online classes.
Well, but we're saying that, but he literally is a graduate transfer, I believe. So he is in graduate school. He's not an undergrad.
All right. So he's working on his thesis or something, we'll say.
I don't know.
Maybe he's just taking thesis credit this semester. So he's at home with his laptop working on his thesis.
There you go.
We've solved it.
Well, he's doing field research.
I'm still going to send a trial balloon up to Brandon and some of this crowd too. Hey, did you see that friend of the show, Brandon Marcello's changed jobs yet again?
I did see that.
He is now with Auburn Undercover.
I did. I saw that.
Chilling that crowd.
And stole War Room Eagle away from College of Magnolia.
They did?
Oh, he did. Brandon hired him this first day.
Oh, so War Room Eagle is now working for Auburn Undercover?
He is.
I did not know that. Wow. Okay. And so there's Lauren. What's her name? They have a new Auburn beat reporter that kind of had to step in at the last second.
For SEC Country, you're talking about?
Yeah, for SEC Country, because Brandon was there for about 15 seconds. And she's been doing some video reports and stuff. I just want to give a shout out to her because she kind of got thrust into this, you know, out of nowhere. And Lauren Shute, yeah. So bless her heart, Lauren Shute. I'm glad that she's working hard trying to get Auburn fans another source of information besides what we already have. So, okay. So without Jamal Dean, we need the Miami guy back, and we hope he'll keep working on his thesis or dissertation and come back soon. Is he actually injured, or what's the deal?
I honestly am not sure what the deal is with him right now.
We heard personal business, and then, you know. Okay, you have a note here, quarterback race. I first thought, what? Oh, you mean like the competition. Okay. So what are your thoughts currently on the quarterback competition?
First of all, the idea that we're like, there's no tactical advantage to not naming a quarterback. No,
that's silly.
I mean, it's 2016, and Clemson is going to prepare for every quarterback on the roster. It's not going to be like, if we say the starter is Sean White, they're not going to not prepare for the read option stuff when you play Auburn. They're just not. So there isn't anything to be gained there. So to me, this is the latest that Gus has gone without naming a starting quarterback.
He keeps spinning it that it's a good thing, but I'm not buying it. Are you?
Not 100%, no. I think it's a case where I think it's probably very even.
Yeah.
And therefore, it makes it hard on the coaches to make the decision, and they keep wanting like one guy to be like dominant and the other two guys to be bad or whatever. So they go, well, that's it. Race over. Boom. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yep. Make it easy for them. And it's probably something also where they're looking around, maybe hoping that John Franklin III would, you know, get better and play well.
Mm-hmm.
Because on some level, I think they think there's a lot of advantages to him being the quarterback. I don't think it's going to be Jeremy. I like Jeremy Johnson. I think, like I said, you know, it goes back to what I said last year. I think he probably has the highest ceiling of the three of them. if you want to talk about if Jeremy Johnson played as well as he can play, that is better than Shaun White or John Franklin III playing as well as they can play. But I don't think they're going to start him, because I think if Jeremy was a starter and he came out and had a bad series or two against a really good Clemson defense, that stadium would be really, really restless and really antsy. And I think, you know, they know it's going to be a good crowd. It's going to be a night game and a TV game and stuff. And so I don't think they want to, you know, take the air out of the stadium by even chancing it by having Jeremy be the starting quarterback. This is my opinion. So everything I've read is I think it's going to be Shaun White, and I think John Franklin III is going to play. I bet he plays 10 to 15 snaps during the Clemson game, you know, coming in to make stuff happen. Whether it's in the red zone or short yardage or just the Gus, switch him out and play him thing. And so then I think – what happens down the road will be determined by how well Shaun plays, how well John Franklin III plays in his opportunities, and maybe one of them seizes control of it, you know, in week two or three, and they're the guy. Or if both of them are mediocre, I could see a situation where, like, in week five or six, whatever, we have a bye week that Woody Barrett's a starter.
I was just about to say, how funny would it be if they just rolled Woody Barrett out against Clemson on the first snap? Just to screw – Clemson be like, we prepared for everybody, and then Barrett comes out, and they're like, oh, crap.
You know what? You're saying that, but if Woody Barrett had had his academic stuff in order and he had come through spring practice, it might be him.
It might. It might well. Well, you know, here – you know, we're talking about what they kind of wish would happen. I think you're dead on, and I kind of feel like this. I feel like – the ideal that they would have had would have been that on a scale of 1 to 10, one of the quarterbacks would have been a 10 and the other two would have been 9s. And they'd have gone, oh, let's take the 10. He's the winner. He's the starter. But we got two good backups, right? But instead, I feel like all three of them are about a 6. That's just the sense I'm getting is all three of them right now are about a 6. And so they're like, if we just keep waiting, maybe one of them will be a 7 and we can go with him. Now, the other feeling I've kind of been having, and again, this is just the sense I've been getting from everything I've been reading and hearing and people I've been talking to, but the other sense I've been getting is, like, early on, if they had named a quarterback immediately, I think that would have favored John Franklin III, right? Because don't you
think... No, I disagree.
Hold on. I think that all things being equal, they wish that Franklin could have come in on day one and seized control and been a great passer and established control. Okay. And then because that didn't happen, now it becomes a competition with all three of them. And I think that after that, the longer it went on, it favored Shaun White because he was kind of the steady hand and we know he could pass. Now, when Shaun White in that intermediate time period didn't seize control, now I think it starts to favor John Franklin again. Because as time goes by and Shaun doesn't step up and say, okay, Franklin didn't get it done at the beginning, so now it's kind of like, you know, my turn to solidify it. If he doesn't do that, now it starts looking back to, well, you know, Franklin hadn't been eliminated. He's still hanging in there. Maybe he's going to win it. So you disagree.
I disagree about the beginning part. Not at the end, but I think you're 100% on with the end part. I think, you know, they believe, as many people do, that a running quarterback makes this offense more dangerous. And Franklin is clearly that guy.
Right.
And I think Shaun could run the offense and be effective, but he could be a better version of Chris Todd. Which, you know, after last year would be great.
Chris Todd's like, you know, Boomer Esiason at this point.
But I think Franklin came in and he couldn't throw the ball, you know, very well. And I think he didn't know the offense that well. And so they couldn't go to him early and say he's the guy. I think at the beginning, Shaun White had a huge lead because of his experience and his time with the offense and the receivers and stuff. And I think Franklin has caught up to him. That's kind of where I think it is now.
And I think Jeremy hasn't been eliminated because from what I was hearing this morning, I think I was listening to the SEC country to Lauren. She was talking about how they're saying that Jeremy Johnson is a different person this year than he was last year. He's assertive. and he's been watching a ton of film. So, you know, in other words, he's maybe being able to read defenses better, hopefully, is what would come out of that. So I think he's still in it, too. I know that people don't want to hear that. And I think you were right a minute ago about the potential downside if he ended up, you know, kind of imploding again. But that being said, I think he's making it very difficult for them to eliminate him.
No, I think he didn't transfer away. He's, you know, he's there and he's playing hard, practicing hard. And I think if he's the best, then if he gives them the best chance to win, they're going to name the starter and they're going to play him. But I just think, you know, after going through what we all went through last season with him, that if Jeremy comes out there and doesn't do well, it's going to be bad. Bad for him and bad for the energy in the stadium. And I just worry about it. I do. I don't want him. I want him, you know, if he plays, I want him to come out there and light it up and everybody, you know, to have a happy ending kind of a story.
Right.
That's what I want to happen, but I worry about that. So
I totally agree. So, let's see. The other news thing, did you see the comic book covers Marvel did on several of the opening games?
Yeah, those are cool.
Yeah, the one that was hilarious, though, was Florida State Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
Because that cover had the Garnet guy and the Gold guy fighting an Ole Miss football player. And people are cracking on how that, you know, it could have, should have been the Chief Osceola and all that. But what's funny to me is that Ole Miss could have been like a Colonel Sanders dude standing there.
Mm-hmm.
Could have had Colonel Sanders punching a Native American is basically what that cover.
could have been a bear.
It could have been the black bear. It could have been Admiral Akbar. Had the whole rebel fleet. So I just thought that was kind of funny. Okay. Let's look at Clemson a little bit. And I've also got a couple of factoids we get to in a little bit about Clemson. So let's rock and roll here. The first game coming up, we're recording this on August 21st. So we've got basically 13 days at this point until kickoff. Hallelujah. You know, I said this morning, there's two things that we know for sure. One is that it's going to take forever for those 13 days to go by. And the other thing that we know for sure is that once it goes by, we'll blink our eyes and the season will be half over.
That's true.
Always works. So Clemson, the last time we saw Clemson, they were disappointing us terribly by failing to do the Lord's work and defeat the great Satan.
It's true. But they played about as well as they could play in that game, I think.
They played well. They didn't embarrass themselves and roll over.
No. And I think the takeaways from that game, that, you know, if people have forgotten it or blacked it out or didn't watch it, are, you know, number one, that Clemson has offensive and defensive lines that can play with SEC teams. That their offensive line, you know, was not overpowered by Alabama's defensive line in that game at all. And that their defensive line did a pretty good job in that game. They got a lot of pressure in the backfield, and they've lost their two really good defensive ends, but all their tackles are back. And they're, you know, they've produced a lot of kind of NFL caliber defensive ends the last few years. So they have some guys, you know, waiting in the wings to move into those positions. They have their linebackers back. They'd be pretty solid there. And their offensive line, you know, has some good talent on it, and they're pretty good players. So I think that's the first thing. A lot of times when Auburn plays a non-conference team, you think, well, we're going to have a huge advantage on the lines. And I think the Auburn defensive line against their offensive line is going to be a really, really good matchup. But the biggest thing is, you know, they got the best quarterback in the country, and they got, you know, three or four really, really good receivers and a good running back. So if you go back and watch any of that game or the highlights in that game, he made a lot of great throws. And he's very dangerous moving, you know, outside the pocket. He's very accurate, has a very strong arm, and he can put the ball in there in a small window. So the guy doesn't have to be wide open for him to move around and, you know, give him a little space and make a pass. So if Auburn, you know, rushes the quarterback and they're kind of out of, you know, doing the Jeff Holland kind of out of control thing, he's going to get Watson's going to get away and make some throws downfield. So we need to be under control when rushing him and kind of contain him and bring him down. Kind of some of the ways that teams used to play Cam a little bit, where you don't want him to get outside and have the run pass choice.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. So what do you see Auburn having to do on offense to be competitive in that game? I mean, I know we'll score points, but I mean specifically from a tactical standpoint, what can we do, do you think, against that defense?
I mean, you were saying score points like it was it's silly, but it's truth in a way is that you can't go into that game and think it's going to be a low-scoring game. This is the one of the best offenses of college football, probably the best. And so, even if the defense plays very well might be holding them to 30. So you have to go into the game thinking we got to score points. We can't be, super conservative, run the ball up the middle three times and punt a lot.
Right.
And so I think on some level, Gus has to let it hang, regardless of who the quarterback is. Gus has to let the offense hang out a little bit and take some chances, throw the ball deep, do some, sweeps and ends around reverses, that kind of thing, and take some chances. I think Auburn will have a big advantage of special teams, and so we absolutely have to win special teams in every area. And then I think, defensively, we got to just try and hold them the field goals, stop them when we can. We have them kind of at their end of the field, hold them and force them to punt, and not give them huge plays, kind of make them drive down the field, and let our defensive line make plays. And I think they can do that. But offensively, I think we can run the ball on them. I mean, I think we can run the ball right at him with Petway and Kerryon Johnson. I think they can make some plays. But I think whoever the quarterback is going to have to make plays, some big plays, whether it's Franklin running or whether it's, Sean White completing some passes to these young and untested receivers. They're going to have to make some plays, and then they have to be big plays. And I think that's something on both sides of the ball. We're going to have to come up with – whether the defense is some sacks or turnovers or whatever, or a big play on special teams, and explosive plays on offense too, because we're gonna have to score a bunch of points to win this game. So I think you have to go into it knowing that, and not trying to play a kind of a conservative button up game. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I want to see the return of the hurry up. I want to see a side kick, and I want to see a 2-point conversion. I think those would all three indicate Gus is back. And he's not Pat Dye anymore.
I like it.
We've talked about starting quarterback with regard to like the whole season, but when you think about Clemson's defense in particular, if you were just picking a starting quarterback just for this game, which one would you go with? Do you want that running option more, or do you want a more accurate short passing game?
Clemson is fast on defense. They're very fast, and they're well coached on defense. So I think, the easy answer to me is like, if I'm Clemson and if I'm their defensive coordinator, who scares me more? I think it's Franklin. I think the unknown of him, but also the mix of him running the ball and doing the read option stuff, has to scare you. But also, like, if Franklin's in the game and I'm Clemson's defense, are they going to bring all 11 guys up, near the line of scrimmage and just play the run? Can he throw it over their heads? So,
correct me if I'm wrong. Aren't we in the exact same situation right now that Louisville was at this time last year?
Maybe, yeah.
Didn't Louisville come into the game with us with like three different quarterbacks? They didn't say who's start, and they started like the older passer, and they ended up getting us with the younger running guy.
They ended up playing the freshman younger running guy. Yeah.
So that we could see a replay of that. Isn't that interesting?
That's good point.
History repeats itself. Well, let me take a second here to point out that listeners of the AU Wishbone podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. I've mentioned this before that I got a bunch of books that are on Audible. We've got to get Decades of Dominance. In fact, that's one thing I did want to mention that I failed to mention earlier is if you come to my reading on Saturday afternoon, I've got a reading where for an hour I'm going to do sort of dramatic performances from a couple of my books. And I have it on good authority that a bunch of Auburn people are going to be there. That would be awesome. And if they do, if we do get a bunch of Auburn people in my reading, I promise to dramatically perform a section from Season of Our Dreams. I already know what I'm going to do. Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that ending, you know. So I'm looking forward to that. So but I got a bunch of books on Audible. There's like 200,000 or something books on Audible. I listen to them all the time. Got them on my phone. All you have to do to get your free trial is download your free audiobook. Just go to audibletrial.com/AU Wishbone. That's one word, AU Wishbone. Go to audibletrial.com/AU Wishbone. If you do it, not only do you get a free audiobook, which is could be like a $50 value, but also you help our show. Because if John, I haven't told you this, but if like 7 people out there would try Audible and use audibletrial.com/AU Wishbone, if just 7 people did that, it would pay our bills for a year on this show.
That's great.
That's great. So we just need a few people to do it. So go and pick up your free audiobook, help the show, and help yourself. We got any listener questions?
We have a few. Are you ready?
Woo! Yes, I'm ready. I don't have a listener question sound effect, do I?
You do.
Oh, I do. It's been so long.
You're rusty.
I'm rusty, man.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, 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 dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Don't tell Mira that I forgot. She'll kill me.
All right, first question comes from Emily Rios.
Yay.
Emailed us at auwishbone@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. And she said, "Hey guys, by the time of the next episode, we may or may not know who is the starting QB. Assuming we don't know or it's not JF3, I see a very likely scenario where JF3 is brought in during goal line or third down situations. Last year, plays like this seem almost telegraphed. The opposing defense always knew what was coming. Can you convince me that a potential 2-quarterback system isn't a disaster? And also, how can it be better executed?"
I just wish that it wasn't against Clemson. If we were starting out against, you know, Arkansas State, maybe we could try some stuff like that. And if it blew up, it wouldn't be a disaster. I have this vision of Sean White leading us down the field and then Franklin coming in and them saying, "Well, let's have him throw a pass since it'll be so predictable that he's going to run," and he throws an interception in the end zone, you know. But of course, Sean is no stranger to doing that either now, to be fair.
No, but I think the red zone is an interesting area for this. I think we really struggled in the red zone last year, and I think part of that is you got to have a great running back, a great offensive line. We don't have any big physical receivers other than potentially maybe Kyle Davis, and we didn't have the tight ends at all last year. Maybe we used them some this year in the red zone. So we need some of those kind of guys to step up in the red zone, or we need Franklin to be able to make some plays down there.
Right.
So I think that's an area of the field we could see it. And I see also like the thing where like Franklin sneaks in the game at receiver and then they motion and like Sean White moves over and Franklin comes under quarterback, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I can see that 100% happening or them doing that with Jeremy.
I think Cameron Martin's going to get some carries in the red zone too. That was one of the impressions I got, was they wanted him because they wanted somebody fast down in the red zone.
Mm-hmm. But how is the 2-quarterback thing not predictable? I don't know. I mean, Gus likes to do the run guys on and snap the ball thing, and I think we're going to do that a lot with, I think we're going to bring Sean out, bring JF3 on, and snap the ball, but I think the defense is going to see that coming. It's very predictable in a way that we're going to do this or that. Like you mentioned the bowl game years ago, where Tony Franklin did that.
Oh, yeah, swap them every play.
We didn't want to do that, but...
You can't do the hurry-up, no huddle if you do that.
And it has to be when there's a natural break. I think if the offense is moving and getting first downs and having rhythm, they won't change it. Right. But it's only when there's a stoppage in play, that's when they'll do the run people on and run people off thing. So... Our next question comes from Rusty Owens, and he says, "Do you care who the quarterback is?"
Well, I just wanted to say, I think the answer is JF3 throws a good pass. I mean, if Franklin can pass the ball, the problem's solved.
It's true.
if he can't pass and he just becomes Kerryon Johnson out there as the Wildcat, then yeah, you can't cover that up. So, all right, tell me again the question.
This is from Rusty Owens. Do you care who the quarterback is?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm anticipating the big Woody Barrett slash why can't I ever remember his name? The one you don't ever want me to talk about. That guy. I'm anticipating
Tyler Queen. Who are you talking about?
Not Tyler Queen.
The guy from a year from now.
Joey. What's his name? Not Joey Galloway. You know what I'm Joe, whatever his name.
But the guy that's not even signed with us yet.
Right, that guy hadn't had his prom yet. Him.
I'm not worried about guys who are.
I know you're not
attending their senior year of high school this week.
I understand. No, I don't care. I mean, I think they've each got their strengths, and they're all three likable dudes in a way, and so we just need to figure out the best way to use them. Right.
It's true. Here's the next question. It comes from Auburn Tweep. He says, if JF3 doesn't start, how many jet sweeps does he take this year? One per game?
Yeah, that's kind of the question, isn't it? That how do you use him if he's not the starting quarterback? I mean, does he have a package and comes in and runs a few plays? I mean, you know, they said that about Jeremy, and it turned into, like, what, five passes the whole 2013 season? And one more thing to bear in mind is we keep talking about how JF3 seems like a freshman. Well, just remember, he's not a freshman. He's a junior. Mm-hmm. He's a junior. So whatever he doesn't do this year, you've got one more year for him to do it. And he'll be going against a Sean White, who is a junior, a redshirt junior, next year, if he's still around, if Franklin is still around. And a sophomore, potentially, Woody Barrett.
Mm-hmm. Redshirt freshman Woody Barrett, yeah.
Yeah, so if Franklin doesn't do it this year, his job probably is harder next year than it was this year, because this year he only had to go against Jeremy Johnson and a sophomore Sean White. Next year he's got to go against a junior Sean White and a second-year Woody Barrett. So it only gets harder for him if he doesn't get the job done this year.
Our next question comes from AU Tiger Bloggin, who says, who will Auburn play in the College Football Playoff Championship game?
I like it. That's my kind of question right there.
Well, you have to answer it.
Oh, I do? Well, see, the thing is, we're going to eliminate two of the other competitors in our regular season. So that just, I guess, leaves Oklahoma, right?
There you go.
I'll say Oklahoma.
All right. Auburn Tiger Talk says, quarterback, who cares? Who's going to win the deep snap holder battle?
If only that was our only question.
And Tyler Stovall is the answer.
Oh, okay. Because we don't even know who the punter's going to be yet.
It's going to be Kevin Phillips, I think, dude.
It's not going to be Ian Shannon? Okay.
It could be. GDD01 says, I'm having a tough time getting excited about this season. Is it just me? Am I a spoiled fan?
Oh, my God! You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Holy cow! Oh, my God!
Oh, it's the worst one. This is a big one. Hear that, Elizabeth? I'm coming to join you, honey.
If you feel that way, George,
blame yourself.
Because I don't know. I mean, Pat Dye's not
walking. Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
I don't know what to say. I'm excited. Are you not excited?
I'm excited. I mean, I love college football, and I'm excited for the season every year, and I think this Auburn team has I think everybody gets wrapped around the axle by the quarterback situation, and I think probably the kicking Javon Robinson off the team at fall camp didn't help. But I think the defense is going to be pretty good. I think we're going to be really good on special teams, and I think the offense is going to be better than last year. Like I said at the beginning, the schedule thing is really tough, but I think Auburn can play with all these really good teams, and I think it's going to be a more fun team to watch.
I think so, too. And here's what I meant to reply to Tiger Blogging about the playoffs.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
Please.
All right. Josh, who's at the Blipster, says Jeremy Johnson's name starting quarterback with JF3 is a role player. What would your reaction be?
Tell me the names again.
Jeremy is named the starting quarterback, and John Franklin III is a role player, like the Wildcat quarterback or something. What would your reaction be?
And I say you!
That would be amazing. I don't know. I mean, it would mean that Jeremy has redeemed himself, you know, 180 degrees and come full circle. And honestly, I can't think of any... You know, if we have a good season this year and everybody lets up on all the pressure and all that, I can't think of a better storyline than the redemption of Jeremy Johnson.
I think if Jeremy started the Clemson game and played a great game and we beat them on national TV and he was the man, I think that would be awesome.
That would be like when Cobb beat Georgia after having surgery, you remember, on his...
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, and I want to bear in mind, think about Jason Campbell in 2003.
Yes.
And then think about Jason Campbell in 2004. SEC Player of the Year, first round draft pick, undefeated, Sugar Bowl MVP, SEC Championship champion MVP. I mean, so it could happen. Strange mm-hmm. things have happened. We know he's a good quarterback. He's just got to get it together. Any other listener questions?
No, I think that's it.
John, tell us about the latest on the Lorindo Book Tour.
The Lorindo Book Tour marches on. Some exciting news on that front. The first thing is that Auburn running back coach Tim Horton apparently read the book and tweeted that he said it was a good read. Would have loved to have known this man. And that was exciting. It was a reference to the book Lorindo by Ken Ringer. And Ken Ringer did a little book tour in Minnesota where Lorindo was originally from. They went to northwest Minnesota to a town called Not Home. And that's where Gene Lorindo and his wife retired. And they had a book signing there. And then they went up to Gilbert, Minnesota, where in the town where Gene Lorindo grew up. This was like in the Great North Woods. And had a book signing at a bar there. And they traveled on up to Lake Superior to the Coast Guard station where Lorindo was stationed for a while and played basketball and visited with the men's station there. And so that was exciting. And it was a way – part of it was, you know, there were a lot of people up there provided research and resources for the book, pictures and stuff. And it's a way for the author, Ken Ringer, to go back and thank those people for their time. But if you're interested in a book about Auburn football, SEC football, college football, but also about, you know, a man who was an Auburn man but did a lot of other great things in his life, was in World War II, you know, played college football and college basketball and, for many years in many different places – and was really one of the, you know, kind of the pioneers of the sport in terms of offensive football and coached some of the greatest offenses in Auburn history. This is a book for you. So,
correct me if I'm wrong. Did you say that they went up to Hard Home?
No.
They got attacked by zombies, but Jon Snow was there, man. Jon Snow saved your dad and fought off the ice zombies. Okay, if you watch Game of Thrones, you get my reference anyway. That was okay. Well, that is awesome, though. I remember the chapters early on about Minnesota and everything up there, and that's kind of cool they got to go there. That is so awesome. That's really cool. I guess your dad's going to have a book signing in Tokyo Bay next, right?
I don't know about that one.
Driving the ship. That's so cool. Okay. Let's see. We've got...
Factoid of the Week.
Factoid of the Week.
And I mentioned the one before, I think, about LSU, but it bears repeating just because I think the LSU game this year is so pivotal. The LSU game, the most important thing about LSU's game this year with us is that it is in Auburn. And the last time a 9-win or better Auburn team lost at home to LSU was 1970. Now, will this be a 9-win team? I don't know. But I think it has a chance to be a 9-win team And if so, they could get that ninth win by beating LSU. So it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy in a way. But the point is, Auburn always plays LSU strong in Auburn, no matter how good, you know. I mean, the greatest example, that's 2008. LSU was coming off the national championship, a joke national championship, but still, it was a legit national championship, kind of. And Auburn was the 2008 team that they fired Tuberville over, okay? And all that Auburn did was go out there and barely lose. Same thing in 2012, mm-hmm. right? 2012, horrible Auburn team. The one game Auburn came the closest to winning in 2012 out of all nine of those games we lost, right? We lost nine games, John, in 2012. I don't know if you heard. You were doing the show, right? You remember.
We did that podcast every week.
We did. We took that doctor visit every week, got that shot, got drilled in the teeth. Nine games Auburn lost that year, and the one we probably came the closest to winning of those nine was LSU. So, because it was at home. So we've got a legitimate shot, Fournette or no Fournette. And I just want to point that out. Now, a couple other factoids. These are kind of Clemson and John Heisman related. But first, talking about John Heisman, I've kind of ruined the trivia question here, but I was going to ask, okay, I'll ask it this way then. What group or club did John Heisman found at Auburn in 1897?
I don't know.
In 1897, John Heisman was the head coach at Auburn, and the athletic department, or whatever it was then, owed money for something. I don't know, transportation or something. And so Heisman founded Auburn's first theatrical group, the API Dramatic Club. And he wrote and directed and co-starred in a play to raise money to pay off the football team's debt. How cool. Wow.
That's cool. That's a good story.
It is. That's a story worthy of your dad writing a book. Popping up. Here's a weird thing about Clemson versus Auburn that I told you was coming up here in a little bit. I was just saving it for the factoid segment. We know that both are Tigers and they're both kind of the other team in the state, but also get this, both Clemson and Auburn, obviously they both love orange. And of course that's because Clemson swiped all of our stuff when they took our coach. But both teams were coached in recent years by a son of Bobby Bowden. They are the 2013 national runner-up versus the 2015 national runner-up. They both have potential dual-threat quarterbacks. We'll see. Oh, in those years, at least, they both did. They both did, right? You know, both of them came back, Nick Marshall in 2014 and Watson in 2016. Both teams have or have had Kevin Steele as defensive coordinator. Hopefully ours works out better than when they had him. Both are coached by offensive-minded coaches who were on the previous staff and were hired to be the head coach. And finally, they beat Florida State and lost to Alabama. We beat Alabama and lost to Florida State.
That's pretty good.
Championship. I figured all that out this morning, and I thought, you know, I got to share that.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. Also, the thing that cracks me up about Alabama fans, one of millions of things, is that Auburn comes within one play of winning the national championship, and Alabama fans, you know, talk to us like we're garbage, which, of course, they always do. Clemson loses to them in the national title game, and, of course, they're an honored opponent, and Dabo is basically coach in waiting at Alabama. That sums it up, doesn't it?
It's, as I told somebody, it's all the more reason we need to beat Clemson and beat Dabo and make him look bad on national TV.
I agree. And one last thing about Clemson. I was looking them up on Wikipedia, and it lists their top four or five rivals. They list as one of their top rivals Boston College. The crap? Boston College? What? Boston College? How is Boston College a Clemson? I assure you, Nobody in Boston College or in Boston has any idea what a Clemson is, much less where it is, okay? Those people don't know that you exist, Clemson, so I don't know what they're talking about.
I think they're in the same division. That's the issue.
Yeah, well, I found a wiki page on Clemson, and I had a note to myself to look up more Clemson trivia, but I didn't because I don't care. I just don't care. So
fair.
There's your Clemson trivia. All right. So you had a note here about looking ahead. How good is this Auburn team? I think we've kind of covered that. What? Anything else you want to say about that? Because you wanted to talk about the schedule.
I just wanted to say that I think this team could be better, could be significantly better than last year's team, and only be a little bit better record wise because the schedule is so tough.
Exactly.
There's a website run by a guy named Brian Freemoo. It's BCF Toys. BCFToys.com is the name of it. If there is a thing there under schedule, and it basically says, you know, if he ranks all the schedules and has a cool data visualization thing, and Auburn's schedule is by far the toughest in the country. And he has a thing where it says, like, how many games would an elite team lose playing your schedule? With the idea that if you have one of the schedules where you have a bunch of cupcakes and like two great teams, mm-hmm. you know, or versus like a schedule where you have like 10 really good teams. And so Auburn's schedule, again, by far the toughest in the country. And it says, how many teams would an elite team lose playing Auburn's schedule? And it's 2.5. Okay.
Yeah.
How many games would a good team lose playing Auburn's schedule? It's 5.5.
Oh,
okay. How many games would an average team lose playing Auburn's schedule?
Oof.
And it is,
I don't know what,
almost 8.
Oh my gosh.
So I think I'm not trying to scare people with that, but I think people, you know, because our schedule's tough every year, people overlook this stuff. And I think there's a chance that this team could be much better, but could go 8-4.
It's just going to come down to how, right?
That's right. If the team plays better on offense, executes better on offense, and is in the games, and we beat one of the really good teams in our schedule, I think people will be fine.
Well, the difference between last year's team and 2010 and 2013 in terms of on-the-field results was that 2010 and 2013 won almost all the close games. They won all the close games except mm-hmm. State. And last year's team seemed to lose all the close games. So, well, they beat Kentucky, which was a fairly close
game. Beat Jacksonville State.
Jacksonville State was a close game, right. Yeah, that's it. The games that they should have been close, but we should have won, we lost close. And the games that we should have won and it shouldn't have been close, we won close. It's like a notch, you know, like there's notches. And we took like two notches down last year. It goes back to what you and I say all the time, John. It's so close. The difference between 12-0 and 3-9 is such a fine, fine line in the SEC West. It's a fine, fine line.
That's right.
It's like falling out of a boat and landing under the propeller, or falling out of the same boat the same distance and landing in another boat full of dancing girls. It's just a fine, fine line.
And I really believe like the defense is going to be better this year. I think it's going to be, you know, a good bit better. And I think the offense, again, is going to be better. It may not be 2013, 2014 level offense, but I think it's going to be competent and not train wreck.
I think we'll be more balanced this year, and we'll see how far that can get us.
Right.
All right. Go ahead.
And finally, I think we're going to have more big plays on both sides of the ball. Auburn, you know, on the offense last year, we had very few big explosive plays. Right. And a lot of that was, again, I love Peyton Barber, but he didn't produce a lot of that at tailback. And our wide receivers didn't produce that. We got to have a lot more of that this year. And defensively, we didn't produce a lot of big plays. We had the fewest sacks in SEC play. We had the fewest sacks and the fewest tackles per losses of any team in the last 10 years in the SEC.
Wow.
So the defensive line is, you know, has got a lot of height this preseason. They got to make plays. They got to make sacks. They got to make tackles for losses. They got to disrupt what the other team's doing. And I think they can. I think we have the talent and the ability and the depth to do that. I think part of the problem last year was we didn't have the depth, and we had guys playing too many plays, and they were exhausted at the end, and that led to some problems at the end of games. I think this year you're going to have, you know, we have a lot of depth. We don't have to play Carl Lawson and Montrevious Adams a gazillion plays. At the end of the game, they're going to be fresh, and they're going to be attacking. So,
yeah. Do we have a 1,000-yard running back this year, and if so, who?
Yeah, I think Kerryon Johnson could be that guy. Maybe it's Petway, maybe it's him. One of those two can definitely do it.
I just think about Peyton Barber getting it last year,
mm-hmm.
even with Kerryon on the team, just because they were used in different ways.
Right. No, I mean, it could be Petway where he gets 20 carries a game, you know, and he grinds out 85, 90 yards a game on those 20 carries, 100 yards a game. I think I could see that 100%. And yeah. He could carry on getting – because Kerryon could get, you know, 10 carries and then 5 pass receptions or Wildcat quarterback runs or something.
And a kick return.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. All right. Let's bring it in for a close. We got one segment left to do.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
Okay. Well, we got quite a few games on the slate for Dragon Con weekend, or Labor Day, as people who are uncool call it. And let's see. Let's just run through them quickly. Tennessee gets off to the start of what they think will be their best season in like a decade, going up against mighty Appalachian State. Any thoughts on that one?
No, they're not a pushover, but Tennessee should win that game at home.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Tennessee makes out of this season, considering that they really do. I mean, they're like us last year this year.
You know? It's different for them. Like I can't even point to a season Auburn had this like them, where they've been building and building and building, and this is the year they got to pay it off.
Yeah, that's true. It's like if they had 8 2012s, and then they had last year, and now this is this year. South Carolina Vanderbilt. That's kind of become like the traditional Thursday night Labor Day weekend game. Is that game Thursday night? Do you know?
It is Thursday night, and I think Vanderbilt's better than South Carolina.
Yeah, I do too. I don't think that the coach is going to last too long there. South Alabama at Mississippi State.
And the opposite of the Auburn schedule is the Mississippi State schedule. So
goodness gracious, yeah. Missouri at West Virginia. There's something just appropriate about Missouri playing West Virginia. I can't quite figure out what it is, but those are two states that could not be geographically much further apart, and yet they seem like they ought to border each other.
And West Virginia is in the Big 12, and Missouri used to be in the Big 12. That's the weird part. So. But I don't. West Virginia could score points, and Missouri can't, but plays a good defense. So that'll be interesting. But
it'll be, yeah. What do you make of Missouri this year? I mean, are they gonna? We talked about them a little bit in the barbecue show, but I wasn't paying attention because it was Missouri.
I think they're gonna be bad. I think their defense is gonna be solid again, but I think their offense is still gonna be pretty weak. They don't have any playmakers, and I think their defense is gonna take a little bit of a step back. They lost that really good defensive line coach.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, they're a bottom half of the East team. They're going to be fighting with, you know, Vanderbilt and Kentucky for the, you know, fourth, fifth, that kind of area.
They had their day.
Yep.
Well, this is an interesting intersectional matchup here. UCLA comes to College Station to play the Collies of Texas A&M. And we get to see Trevor Knight.
And we get to see Josh Rosen play an SEC team who's the, you know, the very hyped recruit quarterback. UCLA has a lot of talent.
Yeah.
And, you know, coached by former Falcons coach Jim Mora Jr. And Texas A&M hired away their offensive coordinator, Noel Mazzoni, in the offseason. You got to like A&M at home and their defensive line and that, you know, Knight and his receivers can make some plays. But I think it's not good. This isn't going to be a game where they roll over. UCLA has a lot of talent. They have a very good quarterback again. And I think they could make plays in this game too. So that should be an entertaining game to watch.
What coach did you just say? Jim Mora?
Playoffs? Playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
His son is the UCLA coach.
Absolutely, yes. LSU at Wisconsin. Don't they play every year? I feel like LSU plays Wisconsin about as often as we do.
It's kind of weird.
It's like Wisconsin plays Auburn, Georgia, and LSU every year, it seems like.
And it's not at Wisconsin. They're playing Wisconsin, but it's at Lambeau Field, which is kind of cool. So
frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. Oh boy, that could be interesting.
Not really. I think LSU's going to paste them.
I was going to say if Wisconsin still had their defensive coordinator, maybe it would be. Yeah. La Tech at Arkansas. Who cares? Yeah. Georgia versus North Kakilaki in Atlanta. So now I get to see who's going to be annoying me by trying to take my hotel room away again this year. And it will be Georgia, North Carolina. Gene Chizik against, what's his name? Georgia's coach. Who I've already,
Kirby Smart.
Yeah. Chizik and Smart. Interesting. Who do you like there?
I mean, I think Georgia has a lot of talent. North Carolina is really good on offense. And I think, you know, Georgia's quarterback situation is still a mess. They have the big high-profile freshman recruit Easton coming in. But, you know, if he starts this game, Georgia's defense isn't going to hold North Carolina to 10 points or anything. So I think, you know, they may have to start your guy, your favorite Grayson Lambert. And if they do, I think I like North Carolina. I think North Carolina did give up like the most rushing yards ever in a bowl game to Baylor.
Yeah.
So I could see a situation where Nick Chubb's healthy. They just run him and Sony Michel 40 times for 500 yards. And it doesn't matter what else happens. So
why would they invite Georgia to that game?
Because it'll sell out.
But they'll all drive home. They won't be in. Well, maybe that means I won't have as tough a time with my hotel room. Literally 2 years ago, three years ago, I get a call the day before I'm going to get on the airplane to fly to Atlanta. And my hotel is like, oh, a bunch of football fans came in and they booked up the whole hotel. So they've taken your room away. That happened to me. I got on the plane to Atlanta having nowhere to stay on the other end. So I love the Chick-fil-A kickoff game and all that. I love when we're in it particularly. Otherwise, though, it's a pain because they make me nervous, you know. Southern Miss at Kentucky, I don't care. UMass at Florida, come on. That's the kind of game that gets canceled for lightning and lack of interest. Mostly lack of interest. USC versus Alabama in Dallas. They're meeting halfway. It's like neither could come the whole way. Southern Cal versus Bama. This is the renewal of the series where Alabama learned that they should have African-American players on their team. It is.
I know it is.
Segregation Bowl.
And USC's good. They have some talent, but I think they're going to get pushed around on both lines, and that's going to be it probably. So.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting for 5 seconds. It's like when Alabama plays Michigan or somebody. It's interesting for 5 seconds, then you're just like, ugh, get this over with. Isn't that game on at the same time on a different channel from us?
I think it starts an hour earlier, so we'll get to watch a little bit, you know, the interesting part.
Yeah, I'm going to say, it'll be all for all intents and purposes, nobody will be watching by the time it's Auburn kickoff. And then the last one is the one that I think is the most intriguing other than ours, which is Ole Miss versus Florida State in Jacksonville. Well,
and I'm excited about that game.
Find out who's the contender and who's the pretender real fast there, don't we?
Yeah, and I think, you know, FSU is the kind of team that's bad for Ole Miss because they're really, really fast on both sides of the ball and really fast on defense. And all of those little passes and swing passes and stuff that Ole Miss likes to do, that you know this from watching Florida State. This can be two guys standing there.
Yeah.
You know, so I think a lot of that stuff that works against other teams isn't going to work against Florida State, and I think they're going to just swarm that Ole Miss offense and really hold them down. I think defensively, Ole Miss can play. You know, Florida State has a great running back. They have an unproven quarterback. They have some really explosive receivers. I think Ole Miss's defense, you know, lost Kandiche and some other really talented guys, and they have a lot of talent, and they'll. I think their Ole Miss defense will kind of hang around and make some plays, but I think You know, Florida State, I like them. I really like their running back, and I think their defense is going to cause Ole Miss all kinds of problems. So
I feel like if Ole Miss could keep everything else that they have the last couple of years and plug in a sort of a Cameron Petway or a Javon Robinson, they could seriously threaten the playoffs.
Oh, yeah. And again, like, they have great receivers, and they got the best returning quarterback in the SEC. So I think, you know, if he goes in there and he's on fire and they're just throwing the ball around and stuff, it could be, you know, they could have a great day and they could win the game. But I also think, like, there's a chance that he's getting, you know, hit every time he drops back and guys are blanketed, covered, and, you know, they're having real problems. So
I think I'm probably going to root for Ole Miss in that game. Is that
right? I hate Florida State. No, it's, come on.
When is that game? Day and time?
That is the Monday night, Labor Day night game.
Like, yes.
7 or 8 o'clock Monday night.
That's beautiful. I will be back home. I'll be on my sofa watching on TV. I love it. Love it. I love when there's a college game on Monday night. That's so – that when we played USC in 2002 in Los Angeles, it was on Monday night in the Coliseum. I got to come back from the con, sit down on the couch, and watch it in comfort with everything, you know, all the travel and everything behind me. It's just such a nightmare trying to watch football games while you're on the road for 5 straight days. So that's very, very good. I'm excited to hear that. All right. Well, I think we've covered everything for tonight. Any last thoughts?
I'm excited for the season to start, Vance, and I'm optimistic. I think this team's going to play better. I want to say one more thing. I've said it all offseason. I think the defense is going to be really good. I think the defense is going to be better, but don't judge the defense as a final product against Clemson.
No.
Clemson is the best offense in the country, and they may score 35 points and have 500 yards against our defense, and our defense may go on and have a great year and shut down a bunch of teams.
Yeah.
So don't judge the final product of whether the defense is good or not by the fact that Clemson rolls up and down the field occasionally.
Words to live by. Don't forget, people, to check out the White Rocket Show. This is our pop culture show that John and I and others do kind of alternate weeks here and there. The last episode went up was about Led Zeppelin, so sometimes we branch out into other topics. I had 3 other guys on there that are big fans. We got part 2 of that discussion about Led Zeppelin, the albums, the band, the music, everything, coming up in about a week. Don't forget to check out Decades of Dominance. If you hadn't got your copy, you need to pick that up. Don't forget to get Lorendo. And, of course, if you want to harken back to our glory year of 2010, Season of Our Dreams is still out there on Amazon, in paperback, in Kindle, and at various bookstores in the Auburn area. All right, I think that we are done. We have thoroughly covered the pre-game countdown. So I guess that just leaves us to say War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
All right. We're good. I'll get this together probably. It's probably going to be – I got 4 hours sleep last night. I got a short class day tomorrow. I'll come home tomorrow afternoon and get it up. So it'll be tomorrow afternoon.
All right, cool.
Very good. See ya.
Night.
Go to bed.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.